Hey, Captain Potters, guess what? In my imagination, you just said what?
What?
Yeah, exactly. Just a whole chorus. What?
What, what, what?
This is the season of Comic Cons, and there is one coming to Springfield, Missouri, which happens to be where we live. And we're thinking about going, but not only going, we're thinking about throwing our name in the hat for hosting a panel or something?
Yeah, you can basically go to these things and offer your services to talk about Star Trek. So the question is, if we were to do this, what area of Star Trek would you people like us to talk about?
And why do we want everybody else to tell us what we're going to talk about?
Because you guys have the most amazing ideas, especially when it comes to theme suggestions for Captain's Pod. And honestly, Danae and I are overwhelmed with the amount of choice.
We thought you could help us potentially narrow it down. So you can email us, ianandanae@gmail.com, with any panel ideas to get our brains a little bit more focused before we throw our name in the hat for the Missouri Comic Con.
And if you want to go to it, it's April 11th and 12th in Springfield, Missouri. We're going to be there one way or another.
So let us know your ideas and let us know if you're going to be there. ianandanae@gmail.com.
To dive right into it, Danae.
Oh, great. I'm ready.
But I missed your gremlin thing, so can you do that again? Perfect.
I think I should be some kind of a Star Trek monster.
You should be.
You're there.
You should
You're
be. There. Can we put a little horn on your head?
Yeah. Yeah. Or more accurately, like the Lady Chin Fuzz. Just a tribble. I'm just a tribble from the bottom lip down.
Lady Tribble.
Ian, what episode was it that it was the salt monster in the original series?
That's fittingly called the Mantrap.
Mantrap, that's right. That was the monster that scared me the most from original series.
Interesting, the big suction face.
Yeah, it was that horrible sort of fish weird eye thing. So
that was back when the monster masks didn't move very much either.
Right.
So it was just this sort of frozen O face.
Oh my.
No face. Not that kind of O face.
No, no, no.
Well, hey, everybody. David from the Lorehounds here, and with me are Captain Ian and Ambassador Danae.
Hello.
From the, what other, are we in alternate dimensions, or are we in the Delta Quadrant? Like, what quadrant are we, or?
Well, we're in Missouri.
Right. That's another quadrant.
The Midwest Quadrant.
Yeah. The Midwest
Quadrant of the galaxy. Yeah.
Our dear, dear friends at the Captain's Pod, and we are here today to do a Starfleet Academy mid-season check-in. Because I have to say, your guys' coverage, the way that you're doing it now with the three things changes and just the whole thing of it just being just you guys and it's not part of a larger enterprise. Sorry, I don't mean to use that word. But
yes, you did. You know what you did.
Well, but not enterprise. You know, anyway. But your coverage is doing the kinds of things that I want a companion podcast to do.
Yay!
Yay!
It's deepening my knowledge. It's expanding my appreciation. It is alerting me to things that I missed or wasn't, oh, I didn't think about that, you know, and making certain kinds of connections. And on paper, I should hate Starfleet Academy. It's all the new Trek stuff.
I'm with you.
It's the floating the camera that never stops moving drives me crazy. And the slick design and the captain's quarters that have fireplaces in them, like, just all just drives me crazy. But damn it, this show is charming the pants off me.
Right. I had all of the precautions going into Starfleet Academy, but I also always go into Star Trek with an open mind, because That's change what it's about. The they are what's that? What's that thing? Change the times are coming. Is it time? They times they are a changing.
Times
one of those
changing.
Things.
I yeah. think you mean get that. Off my lawn. Yeah,
get
no
off
wait.
My lawn is what I actually mean. But
old man shakes fist at cloud.
Exactly, shakes fist at warp core. But I'm right with you. I cannot help but really have a great time with Academy.
Danae, where are you at?
Oh, I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, but. I really enjoyed the modern Star Trek storytelling, and it's right. odd because it started with Strange New Worlds, which is not modern Star Trek. That's like pre-TNG Star Trek, technically, but it's modern
it's meant to be a throwback.
Storytelling. And that's what I'm really liking, because when I watched TNG, which is like the Next Generation, Captain Picard, that whole crew, the storytelling of like the 90s is just such a different experience than the storytelling that we're seeing in something like Academy. And personally, I really like it. I'm learning things like, you know, Star Trek has done different kinds of shows and they have sort of a different vibe in each show. And for me, Academy is really fresh. And so I'm enjoying it.
And for context, for anybody that doesn't know, I'm the kind of, you don't see my scary air quotes, the kind of Trek expert that's seen a lot. And Danae is much newer to Star Trek. So she's definitely going to have we both have a different background when it comes to like how we appreciate
I say trekking. Controversial things about like beloved characters regularly. I have absolutely slammed some beloved characters
and then Jadzia.
Jadzia, oh, I shouldn't have said that, but mean it.
You should. And you've come around.
Yeah, a little. Not well. Okay.
So on your newly formatted show, you're doing the what three things sort of format, which I really like, because, you know, there's a couple of different ways that you can take episodes apart and you can do the scene by scene, which requires a lot of prep. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, capture each scene and make your notes for it and write little synopses for them. It's a lot of work. Or you can do the more flowy conversation and where things go. And somewhere in between there is the, pick three things and then discuss them. And then that ends up getting you to a lot of interesting places and a lot of flowing conversation rather than detailed picking apart conversations. And they're just different, right? They're relative to what kind of show you're covering. They both work excellently. And I really like the way that you're doing it for this show. So I thought what we could do, episode 6 should have dropped by now.
Yes, it has indeed. Yeah.
Have you guys watched it yet?
We haven't watched it yet.
Okay, great. Perfect. No. So we are appropriately mid-season podcast. Yep. We've all seen up to 5. So we're going to spoil everything that we've seen for Starfleet Academy up through episode 5 now.
Phew.
And I would invite each of you to pick your three things and then we'll bing bong and I'll sort of ask you some questions and we'll sort of get into it. And it could be the little things, it could be the big things, and it could be the things that you don't appreciate as much. So Ian, as the Trek spurt.
we've never said that before.
The Trek-spert. I think we must have done.
You must have.
4 years. It must have come up.
That was good.
What is one thing for you about this show that is really present and pulling your attention about the show?
I'm going to stay firmly in my lane and just say that the way I am being serviced as a fan has finally found a balance that I really, really enjoy. Okay. And you can go all over the place with this. You can ignore everything that has come before, which is an undertaking with the 60 years that we have of Star Trek. And you can go over the top and perhaps do a little bit too much and lose your way. Star Trek Picard season 3. It's everything is fine. Everything is fine. It's okay. Everything is fine all the way along that spectrum. What I really enjoy about how Starfleet Academy is doing it is that it's really acknowledging a lot of the history, but then using it to tell a specific story. And the best example of this is with the most recent episode, Series Acclamation Mill, which is following Sam the hologram as she, I don't know how the hologram identifies. I think they do identify as she, but
yeah, anyway. Yeah,
I think so, but as she kind of works out what it is to be an emissary and comparing that to the other most famous emissary in Star Trek history, the Sisko, Captain Benjamin Sisko, and it didn't fall
into, let's do an episode of Deep Space Nine and let's just barrage you with a ton of things. It honored the legacy of Star Trek, of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and of Sisko specifically, mm-hmm. and then added to it. It wasn't just a remember what happened. It was a, hey, part two.
Like, it wasn't just a bowl of member berries.
Yeah, it was
drenched in. Yeah.
Here's one of the continuations of this story. And it wasn't even a resolution. It wasn't here's how this story ended. It was here's the next step. And that is what I realized I really want from a lot of Star Trek. Like, I want a continuation of a lot of stuff that was picked up in TNG. And I want to see overall where the universe is going. And this just, Starfleet Academy seems to be doing that without getting buried in nostalgia. Like, it really is, it feels like that next step for what Star Trek could be.
And they're not being definitive about these things. Like you said, they didn't close the door on Sisko or Jake Sisko, you know, his son's character or the, you know, they left it open and then they gave us a bigger opening with Dax.
Yes.
And moving things forward. Or there's just all these questions about Cardassians and Klingons, like how did these two folks get together? And they're asking a lot more questions and leaving space for us to really run. And
yeah. And it feels like the questions that I would be asking as well. Like, it feels like we're on the same page, which is really exciting.
Right. Did you appreciate Sarah Loftin's appearance on the show? Was that something completely. That was...
I think that was really well handled. I think it was about the only way you can do it. Holograms can be a bit of a cop-out because then you can just bring back anybody at any age, Doctor. but Sarah Loftin in particular, that was, I think it was pitch perfect. And tying it into Anselm as well, for all you Deep Trek nerds, was chef's kiss. Perfect way to do it.
The book, and then giving him his own agency within the space of the Sisko mythology was really great. And then this idea that mythology can be this living thing and this thing that we can use to interrogate where we are today. So the way that they just unfolded the story with Sam and all the blips and the bloops on the screens and the silly college humor stuff. And then it zippered together really nicely in a very unexpected way.
Yep, I agree.
And Jaden's skirt was totally cute. And I'm sure the grognards were like freaking the F out about that. And it was amazing. I was like, what? Yeah, exactly. It was awesome. Danae, what's something that's pulling your attention for Starfleet Academy?
It's sort of like this idea that the writers are really okay with taking Starfleet, taking Star Trek and saying something like, what does this look like this far in the future? And then playing with ideas of characters or like interspecies relationships and then putting these new things on screen that are visually familiar, like we're visually familiar with the Klingon. But what about a Klingon that is attempting to find their strength as a battle ready individual, but battling through words instead of actual violence and physical violence. So they're really comfortable with like playing with the different characters. And one of my favorites is who I call Captain Kitty.
Yes.
Now, I actually genuinely do know that I don't know the character's name. So Ian will have to tell
pull
you.
It out, pull this it out. Is, you can do it. You can do
this
it.
Is, this
it
is classic Danae.
No. Pull it out.
Can you give me a letter?
No.
it's the circle of life.
Nala?
No.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
You got it. You got,
I got it.
It.
Wow. That Simba. Was unexpected.
No, it's actually Captain Simba. Sorry.
It's actually one of those scary things where my brain just pulled something it should not know because I call her Captain Kitty. So this character is one of several sort of ancient, has been around for a long time when Starfleet was really this like hopeful thing or whatever. Then bad crap happened. But there's characters that have been around long enough to be eyewitnesses, and Captain Kitty is one of them. And she is the person that's essentially in charge of the Academy. And I'm really enjoying her role specifically for many reasons. But what I kind of want to point out is it puts on its head, like the Klingon wanting to have like, you know, battle with words. It puts on its head what leadership looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I would lead. like Captain Kitty leads. I don't need to be that old to get permission to take off my shoes and sit backwards in a couch. I don't have to, I shouldn't be questioned if I want to curl up in the captain's chair and have a conversation half upside down just because it feels better for my spine. I'm going to do that. And I've been given authority to do that. And guess what? We're all going to try to get along while we do that. And I love her conversations. She is not on screen too long. She's not on screen too short. They did a clever thing. Episode one, she's pretty involved. Episode two, she's still, you know, pretty involved. But by this point, she is that academic overseer that's giving the speeches to unite the school and remind us why the young voices are so important in a time as we are in rebuilding Starfleet, the Academy, Star Trek. Even Star Trek fans, you know, just this willingness, like, this is the future, guys. This is what it can look like for us. And so her representation of this ideal Starfleet, she's not very cynical. She's like actively investigating this next generation, what it can be like. She's sort of tweaking things and she's behind the scenes pulling strings. And every time I'm with her, I'm like, yeah, let's have more time with her. She also plays with relationships with other academic leaders really well. And she just has this way of building this kind of confidence that at least somebody knows what's going on, even if things are kind of going a little bit squiffy, whether it's, you know, electricity not working properly or there's a rivalry between the War Academy and our Academic Academy. She just models this emotional intelligence from this very old, wise individual. And this like command of strength is really, really, I don't know, it's valuable as I'm watching it. And I find myself, I had this thought, like optimism in TNG in like the 90s on screen is somehow easier to buy than optimism now, watching with so much going on in our world, like our real world. And Star Trek always seems to mimic kind of like what's happening in our real world and tries to kind of give it a place to talk. Being optimistic is kind of difficult. I mean, for me personally, with just so much going on, and there's just something about her optimism that seems more radical now in modern Star Trek than I would have found it to be. Like when I watched something in the 90s and there's like this optimism, it's like, yeah, we were optimistic because it was the 90s. Like, can we actually be optimistic in 2026? This says yes through this character that should know better because she's seen way worse things than we can imagine. And I just love this character. And I think that people may be sleeping on her a little bit.
It's so easy to fall into dystopia, especially in like fiction right now. And especially in sci-fi as well. There is so much dystopia. I am really enjoying this post-apocalypse because essentially Starfleet Academy and the back end of Discovery are TV shows set post-apocalypse, the burn for Star Trek. So this optimism of the future is really refreshing. I really, really like it.
So Alicia brought in a term to our discourse in the Lorehounds, sort of in general, this idea of hope punk. And we'd have to talk with her a little bit more about the origins of it and where we're seeing it. But this was in relation to a podcast that she was on with one of our affiliates, Never Mind the Music, and that's Mark and Nicole, and he teaches music. She teaches psychology, and they do a lot of fun stuff on their podcast around music and in psychological. Like it's like two college professors talking about music and psychology.
I love that.
It's great. And so they've had us on at various times to talk about little pet projects and little ideas. I had my podcast with them. My episode with them was about the generational music theorem, how music leapfrogs across generations and how one generation is making music for the younger one until they start making their own music, which then gets, you know, passed down to the next one. So, but she had an episode and it's, I should republish it on our main feed about this idea of hope punk and she had encountered it somewhere and she was using it in relationship to the Superman movie that was out last year and some music that was in that. And we've kind of started to use it more and more in our Discord and talk about things, you know, is that hope punk? Is that something that is, you know, hope punk? And I think Captain Kitty is hope punk.
Yeah.
Because she's breaking, you know, there's this, this sort of rules be damned kind of punk rock, yeah. you know, challenging of an established authority or way of things doing, but not in a destructive way.
No, in more of a hippie way.
Yeah. And instead of, and like you were saying, Ian, it's not doom and gloom. It's not buried deep in the apocalypse, which is a standard fare for science fiction. Mm-hmm. But it's hopeful. And I didn't think about Captain Kitty because I still don't know how to relate to her. The whole shoes off, curled up in the chair.
That's exactly what she wants. I think that's exactly what she wants.
It is subverting. It's very uncomfortable because it feels disrespectful.
Right.
It feels
with
like
Picard and Janeway and Sisko.
Many fans would say it is 100% without a doubt disrespectful. I'm not one of them, but it is like the feet off on the bridge chair. How dare you? The captain's chair is the thing. It must be. Nah, it doesn't. It's a tool. It's a chair.
Right.
Sit in it.
And where the power and where we find power is in our relationships and the way that we relate to each other. Not in what chair you sit in or what how many pips you have on your collar.
And that's, I think, part of what she's really trying to kind of go for is seeing everybody as an individual, even her bringing in this Caleb character, which will be my second point. But I'm not skipping you, Ian.
Yeah. So, Ian, next point.
Okay. Me, it's really hard to narrow this down to three, but I want to zero in on...
And I hear you squirm every week as you're trying to back it down. Danae's holding you to the form.
It's the hardest thing for me because I want to talk so much about Star Trek. Who would have thought? I should get a podcast at some point and just do it there.
Yeah, buy a cheap microphone and laptop. You can do it.
If I want to talk to somebody, it's the people that are really understandably hesitant based on... no pun intended, Discovery burnout. And because I felt it hard by the end of Discovery, it kind of tripped over itself and got in its own way with these big, huge, overarching, valid themes and valid commentaries. But I think it forgot how to be fun. And it was just mired and swampy and boggy. And I think it will age pretty well, but it did really, really get bogged down. Starfleet Academy, I feel like has deliberately or otherwise, I'd love to know the intention behind it. I feel like it's really learned from Discovery and really learned to balance some fun with really, really down to earth character development as well. Like, pretty much, once you like kind of get past the episode one and two are definitely connected, and there is this underlying theme and story about our main character, Caleb, and him joining the academy and wanting to get back to his mother. But the episodes have been kind of bottle episodes where they pick a character, zero in, do a character study, and then the story progresses through them. So now, after just five episodes, I feel more familiar with this crew, and yes, they don't have a ship necessarily, but they are a crew. I feel more familiar with that crew than I did after 3 years of Discovery. Like, Discovery lost a little bit of that, who are my people, who do I ground into that isn't the main character? Academy has gone the absolute opposite direction and almost kind of like pushed the main character, Caleb, to the side in favor of exploring all of the interesting people.
They trick us a little bit thinking that Caleb's going to be the alpha male story.
Exactly.
Instead, we're moving sideways through all these other characters.
And I love it. And I don't feel like anything is lost. I don't feel lost with the show or the story. I know what's happening. Yeah. And I'm enjoying each episode because it clearly knows what they are. Like, it's a weird thing with Star Trek. You can be like, oh yeah, that's the episode with that, with the salt monster, with that thing that happened, with the candle and Beverly. I can do that with each of these episodes of Starfleet Academy. And I'm just really enjoying that return to really kind of focused character studies in Star Trek.
The thing that I struggled with the most with a lot of the newer Trek entries is what are they saying? What are they doing? And for me, Star Trek... Next Generation was a hot mess from episode to episode, right? There were, you know, you have these epic, epic episodes. And then there's some other ones where you're just like, ooh, that was just cringy as all get out.
And it's wild because in our conversations, I'm reminded that they had to make so many episodes versus now we're like, we get eight.
You try making 26 hits a year.
Right. And they were, you know, they were getting a lot of fan scripts and, you know, using it that way rather than having a dedicated writer's room and all that kind of stuff. So, but there was always, and when they had an episode that was dealing with something, you were like, ah, it's there. You know, it's like, here's this social issue that we're struggling with in our, on our, on our modern life. And I felt like I didn't make it far into Discovery. I made it in season one and a little bit into season two. And it just felt like it was swinging for the big drama and the big space opera, grand overture stuff. And I really haven't watched a lot of other new Trek. I've touched here and there, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And this series is actually addressing and dealing with things like the original series did. Mm-hmm. War and peace, in, you know, race relationships, you know, men and, you know, gender relationships, justice and the courts. This is dealing with stuff that kids are dealing with today.
Yeah.
With identity and your place in the world and self-expression and expectations of your parents and your performance and all of these things. And it's in the Harry Potter, you know, sort of academy encapsulated world, which I'm just so kind of over as well as a story framing device. But damn it.
Damn it. It's a story framing device for a reason.
And it works. You do it
well. Yeah.
And they're working it really well.
It's a great medium.
Yeah, I think that's a balance of, and this will depend on kind of where you pop into the show and who you're relating to, because they have the academic leaders and then they have the youth. And I too am a little bit further away from that youth vibe where I'm like, I don't want to have these conversations. Again, Caleb, yeah, you're making some very questionable decisions right now, sir. And I'm like,
hate kids, get off my Star Trek lawn.
But then you've got these really fun, witty, they're just, they've got too much to deal with this kid's crap, and they're going to like be, they're going to be that way in the hallway with them. And those are really fun, like quirky relationships. So yeah, it's definitely drawing in into that too.
So yeah, Danae, we'll carry on with your number two.
Well, my second point was kind of similar to what Ian was saying, but I think I would want someone to know at the halfway point a little bit more about what the show is doing in its writing, to your point about like being comfortable with breaking away from the one main character. If you just watch the first couple of episodes, you might think that this is about Caleb. Mm-hmm. And at least so far, they really have not gone back into that being the gravitational center where everything sort of bends in towards him and there's trauma flashbacks and this destiny arc of this grand hero, this chosen one energy that I'm like, oh, what are we going to do here? Like, who is this guy?
And it kind of had that sort of setup,
but it hasn't happened so far because there is a restraint in the writing. There's a confidence in the ensemble. And I'm really excited to see that. And I would want somebody to know that there's a bravery there. Are they going to go to it in the second half? Absolutely. Yeah, maybe. We're gonna set it up. They didn't set up a mom trauma for no reason. We don't have a bad guy to. We're gonna. Yeah, I have a theory that very soon we're gonna see our group of people launched into space to save the day, and they have to like space camp style,
right?
You know, that's my big prediction for the show is going. But episode to episode, there's this like you would think that it would be like this really like consistently every episode bad energy, but then all of a sudden they lean on like bro tenderness.
Yes.
And then you would think that he'd be like, you know, constantly like running after the women, and he kind of is because that's what happens. But then the girls are like, hey, I don't really need you to be my definition of a love story, but I do want to kiss you. And that's realistic. And so I kind of am okay with it being there, and they don't spend too much time on it because they're not leaning into Caleb. So they're really like, it's Starfleet energy, it's community over like that singular heroism vibe, and it's just not the one guy show that I was really worried that it was going to be. So he's not the ecosystem. He's more the background. He's more seasoning that's kind of in different scenes. And they even have other like main bro alpha energy going with other characters, and they interplay with how that can work and how they can lean into the different parts of themselves, as you said, the identity kind of who they are. And the show is not really about a mission to accomplish, except for like how your individual barriers are something you kind of have to face. And every single person can identify with that. I remember being really confident in who I was when I was a kid, because I was really confident at home to be me. And then you go into school and you're judged, and then you develop some kind of crippling self mechanism for defending yourself and hiding away from people, or however you go about it.
Layers and layers of scar tissue that deaden you to the world.
And then you're trying to identify by your peer group, and also pair that with your home environment. And then you're out of your home, and then you're in a whole new peer environment where you don't have to actually answer to anybody. And, you know, we've all been there before. And so this is kind of pushing in on those stories a little bit. So we see, you know, very strong female characters that are in leadership roles and confident in what they're doing. We see that with everybody. But it's not so heavy handed that it's in your face every single episode. It's more like, oh, I thought this episode was going to end on some sort of weird thing, but then bro dude is making your bed.
Oh man, because, that moment killed me.
Because he sees you trying to make your bed and you've never done that before, because there's actually like an awareness of you as an individual. And that's the kind of crap I want to see. I want to see, if these were my friends, I'm winning, because I want to have a really crappy day and show my worst side and not realize that my defenses are all out because I'm not used to being an adult yet and like regulating emotions and being self-aware or whatever. And I want to have people that are going to be like, hey, listen, we all have bad days. Let me help you breathe. Like, let's do that. And if that's bothering people to see on TV, then like, okay, great. Yeah, maybe we want to see more space battles, but guess what? You can go do that. You can go watch those episodes with other shows.
Yeah.
And you can see those cool things, but like, get uncomfortable, people. You know, let's watch what happens and like really appreciate that the Academy feels real because they're making it bigger than just one character.
There was the scene with Jaden and I forget Fishboy's. You call him Fishboy.
Raimi.
Yes, Transformer Boy.
Transformer Boy, yes. Fishboy. Actual name, Raimi, Darren Raimi.
Yeah.
And he's helping Jaden, the Klingon, with an anxiety attack, basically.
Yeah.
And then Jaden is like, he's into it. And then he pulls away and he feels uncomfortable. But then later he uses the technique and we see that on screen. That is a very kind of realistic portrayal of two men getting intimate and close, you know, an emotional intimacy, feeling one of them feeling uncomfortable and then pulling away, but still taking away from what the gift that was given in that moment.
Yeah. Not a total rejection because it was intimate.
Right.
It's one of my favorite scenes of Star Trek
It's real.
I don't know how many years. It is an incredible. When we covered it in the episode, I called it the anti-toxic masculinity scene, because it is, it knows exactly what it's trying to do. Because he comes into the room and says, punch me. Because that's what bros do. That's what men do. And then just like hard pivots into this closeness between them. And I didn't get a second of sexual tension. It's fine if that's there as well, but it's not what the scene was about. It was hug your brother. Like, he probably needs it.
Yeah. And I think maybe it's because I grew up in the 90s storytelling. That's just something that I'm really relieved to see, that there's like a development, that we're not just focusing on the really athletic hero Caleb. You know, that it's not every episode. And I'm really relieved to share that with you. So if you want to give it a watch at this point, there's really not too much Caleb. Actually, they let him be a fool. They let him be a leader. It's just really surprising to see what they're doing with this character. They don't spend too long in any of his diversity.
And if you were only to watch one and two, you might check out and go, this is
I know where this is going to go.
Yeah. And it's not. And when you get to three and four, you go way off of that track.
Here's fun. if you're used to like, oh, this is what writers do. Okay, great. So he's going to be the idiot now. Everyone's going to make fun of him. And then they're like, surprise you because he does really, really good in debate.
Yeah.
You know? And they're like, right. Oh, okay. So he's actually like really, really good at this stuff. But then they let him fail over here. It's just, they let him be whatever he is and they don't apologize.
To have
and
dimension.
That's kind of true for every character. But yeah. That was my next point, which is kind of what your point was too. So,
and like you said, Danae, there's no like kind of, there's no mystery box in this, which I think it really benefits from. I'm not constantly wondering, like one of the things that dragged the card down for me was what's the mystery? Yeah. What are they chasing? What are they getting after? And when you drag that over 10 episodes, it's exhausting unless you've got this killer mystery that keeps on delivering. Let's just not have it. Let's just tell some stories. Mm-hmm. I don't need a mystery carrying us all the way through. Where is his mum? That's enough mystery. That's cool. Fine.
And what you were saying too, Danae, about this range of characters, as we're learning about them, they're all dealing with their different things. They're all finding connections in different ways with each other and with the instructors that are there. And there's some like mentor-mentee things going on. But nobody is the center per se, not even Captain Kitty. She's not even the center. There is a real horizontal flatness with everything.
It's not a person that's the center. It's a concept of what Starfleet is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so the show just kind of keeps hinting through the lens and through the filter of these characters what they're hoping it will be. And for me, the really cool part is that the writers are saying, hey, guys, we hope it's us. Like, we hope it's these kinds of people, right, which is what they've been doing this whole time. It's just, man, the 60s, it looked really weird. There weren't a lot of women or anybody with color, you know? Well, okay, there was a couple. But, you know, we're bolder now. Now we're going into men having emotions? What?
Wait, and Klingons no less.
So, I don't know. The character is the brand in this really unique way. And I kind of love it.
Cool. Ian, third point.
Oh, my final point, and this is my disclaimer, cautionary point, because I don't want to mislead anybody or like build their hopes up too much. I'm having a blast, but if you are ardently against Discovery and really don't like this new era of Star Trek, there are going to be things about Academy that you don't like. Like visually, it has that same Discovery visual that I'm not a huge fan of. Like visually, it isn't changing anything from Discovery. It looks very, very similar. Lots of lens flare, same uniforms essentially.
Floaty camera, very constantly. Shiny floors.
Very shiny floors, very, very dark sets. Mm-hmm. And the Gen Z-ish modernization of things will take a bit of getting used to. I think it's used sparingly, but there is some of that. Overall, there is still the DNA of Discovery inside of this. So don't go into it shocked. You're like, huh, this kind of still feels like Discovery, but I would encourage you to get deeper on it and really watch it as new Star Trek and new episodes of something. And kind of shelve some of the Discovery bias that you might have, if you have it. But just don't be shocked. So that was a cautionary tale that ended up into a get over it. but it's right. I don't want to trick anybody into watching the show.
Is that Kurtzman's fingerprints on the visual style of
things? Is still Kurtzman show running, leading this, yeah.
And he was Discovery?
He was Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds. He is the current
showrunner
with Michelle Paradise of the like kind of the whoever has the reins of Star Trek. It's Michelle Paradise and Alex Kurtzman right now.
Got it. Like I was saying before, in terms of what's on paper, it's the constantly moving cameras, the thing that kills me the most. I can deal with the slick sets and the holographic touchscreen pop-up whatevers. I can handle all of that. It's the camera work that drives
There's
me
less
crazy.
Camera nonsense. Like, you're not constantly being, like, on every single axis all at once.
Yeah.
Discovery Season 4 and 5 was, it was like they just turned the gravity plating off at any opportunity. And it just, drove me nuts as well. Maybe I'm just, my eyesight's just going, I can't do it anymore.
I accidentally watched episode 2 before I watched episode 1.
You told me this. Yeah.
Oh no.
It took you so long. To
and then I was listening to your podcast and I was like, what the fuck are they talking about?
These people are insane. None of this
and then
happened.
I was like, oh, and then everybody was like, oh, episode one was great. It had all the feels and it was sort of, you know, the kind of reboot stuff that I want. And then I went back and I watched episode one and I hated it.
Oh, no.
But I liked episode two. I was like, oh, this feels weird, but I kind of like it. And I think if I had watched episode one, I would have checked out then.
Oh, boy. Mm. Interesting.
Because of all of that stuff.
These things
right?
happen for reasons.
Mm. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. That's
And so what to Danae's point is what was happening in episode two that was happening was, okay, yeah, we're doing this weird Beta Z stuff and the hot guy and the hot girl and, you know, all the young people are looking hot. Like, really, like there's some beautiful people on the show.
Yeah.
And yet there's growth and trajectory and self-reflectiveness and dealing with some kind of real issues. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And then I was like, all right, I'll kind of second screen watch episode three. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's things happening with these characters. They have interiority. Yeah. They have, you know,
self-awareness.
Like, okay. Yeah. So by the time we got to five, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a completely different show. It's yeah. not at all the Discovery thing, but it took me some recalibration. Absolutely. And that's where your podcast was helping me to go through it, because then I could actually start to see some of the deeper analysis and what the writers are actually doing with some of the characters and stuff. And my biggest hope, I think, is that we continue to get that character growth from episode to episode, mm-hmm. so that if something happens with a character in an episode, when we're two or three episodes down from that, they're not reset to baseline, but they've actually taken that growth and are applying it in concurrently. So, Danae, your final thoughts?
Yeah, I think I want to point out that there's also this idea of like this war academy. And true to your point also, David, like the idea that like these conversations are happening after the show and that feeds into a deeper understanding and appreciation for what I'm watching, I 100% am with you on that. If I was just watching this without the conversations and context and kind of like taking the time to dig in, I think this would be a superficial, interesting watch that I would enjoy on a superficial middle ground level.
Agreed. Yeah.
But it's really like the conversations after that give it a lot of depth for me. And one of them is the characters of the War Academy. I think I would just be like, oh, this is that like you have to have a rivalry trope thing going on. And that's true. That's
happening in writing all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very Slytherin.
But in the world of Star Trek, we're coming out of a phase when this organization had to have an army to protect itself because there was a resource war, essentially. And so the context in our conversations on the podcast have helped me to kind of go, oh, this is why they exist. And what makes it interesting now is that the War Academy kind of has to accept that Starfleet is back, that there's this generation of hopeful young ones that are going to shape the future in this scientific, what is the word when you have a diplomatic conversations, the bridging the gap between worlds, like this approach to how to like coexist with other people that recently really screwed over some people really bad. Like,
yeah, the Federation screwed some people.
And the show is apparently just for the first time telling everyone that Klingons are basically extinct. What? Like, there's just, it's like, oh, wait, when did that happen? And then, oh, that wasn't in Discovery. Oh, interesting. So all of us get to be surprised at the same time, you know? So that's really interesting. So we have like Starfleet turn their back, quote unquote, on a lot of people. And we saw them do questionable things that were very militant in episode one with Caleb and his mom. And the context of the state of the universe at the time that the burn happens, and then seeing what's happened post and sort of the repairing of relationships. And now there has to be a conversation between sort of two sides of the coin, the war and the diplomat. And it's not just that the war people are there to cause friction.
Oh, it's interesting. It's a meta structure of what's going on in the universe.
In the universe.
Yeah,
I get it.
And that's a really important for me, because it takes it from being a, oh, we're going to go learn cool Starfleet magic today at the Academy, into you all have an important role to play. Like, we do need you to learn science. We do need you to learn about
diplomacy and history.
All of those things, because we can't just be war. That doesn't work either. And so there's this repairing of the world that's happening, the bringing the fold back together, casting a net for the new, looking ahead, you know, head up out of the clouds, but then also they have to talk to the boots on the ground, and they have to have conversations about the importance of all of them together. And I don't know that they've done a bunch of that. Like, they're not heavy handed in those conversations so far, but it's been hinted at with Captain Kitty and, you know, Mr. Stick Up His Butt. So he's in charge of the war kids, you know, and so the war kids are all like wearing black all the time, and they're quite serious, understandably so. And I like it. I think it's important. I think it's a ideology versus reality sort of a situation. Like, the war people are like, hey, realistically, we only have so many resources, and a lot of people are angry, and we have to protect ourselves. And then there's the ideology behind it.
Yeah. We've just lost David.
Yeah, let's wait till he comes back. Mm-hmm.
Let's go all the way to the back. So we'll see where I get with the editing of this, but we had a major technical glitch on my end. My internet went out. I said, and Danae was making the most eloquent,
of course,
and beautiful points. And I absolutely agree with absolutely everything you said.
Thank you so much.
And I'll have to hear it on the replay.
Well, also, Ian has a transition from the war chat.
Did I?
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say? Did I start saying something?
Definitely. It was wonderful.
There is an accountability as well that I really, really love with having this War Academy and Starfleet. So it's like Starfleet cannot just be about pew, 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 pew. However, the
that's
war
the transition.
Academy,
pew, 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 pew.
But the War Academy is like, that's all we had. You guys disappeared. And now you're just coming back like super confident when we were holding the fort for about 100 years. So there is this bitterness between them where the War Academy has just been established, continuing. And now there's just like an accountability between them that I really, really enjoy. Like, they're going to have to find a way to get along. And there is a little bit of the Hogwartsiness that I'm just like, okay, move on. Slytherin hates Gryffindor. Gryffindor hates Slytherin. Got it. Move on. I'm hoping they've done enough of that now, but I love the foundation of splitting it into two, because personally, that allows me to enjoy Starfleet as Starfleet, a vessel for exploration, and not pew, 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 colonization.
But it also recognizes that the pew, 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 pew is part of it.
Yes.
You know, because a lot of the shows we've seen, well, I've seen, are more like the exploration and not the war. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in Strange New Worlds, there was that episode where they, like, documentary style, tried to, like, dig into what we're doing here. Yeah. Are we actually a fighting vessel? Yeah. Or what, like, what are we doing here, guys?
What are we doing? Are we military or are we science?
So they're not really, like, just pretending like Star Trek doesn't do that. They're bringing them both together.
And they're doing, there's this interesting reboot in the sense of, what is Starfleet? Why did we fall in love with the idea of Starfleet all the way back from original series, which is very military, right? And we're coming out of a couple of world wars and an active hot war in Southeast Asia at that very same time. And then, yeah, Next Gen was this sort of Clintonian 90s. We're going to, you know, be out in the world and doing all this great stuff. The military thing's going to be a little in the background. We're going to lead with diplomacy and smarts and all this kind of thing. And then, yeah, through all the other shows, what's the idea of Starfleet? And did it get lost, or did it kind of transmuted? And I feel like they're bringing something back for me in the sense of, what is Starfleet?
Yeah.
It is a holistic and well-rounded approach. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's, you got to lead with a little poetry, and sometimes you got to lead with an elbow and a knee and a, you know, some
and a bat-leth.
And a bat-leth. Yeah. And sometimes you need to think about history or philosophy or science. Yeah.
And be
it's
ready.
All of it and in an active, dynamic, ongoing conversation with itself.
That's right.
Not a determined, settled, you know, oh, this is CSI in space kind of stuff. And we're all like really square jawed individuals, like, you know,
CSI. Oh, yeah. I kind of want that.
Section 31 dreams. Let's, dashed.
Nope.
But they are doing a very brave thing. There are a lot of characters to absorb in this show. You know, it's not just a small crew that's running the ship and then we don't see all the rest of the people on the ship. There's a bunch of people.
There's a whole bridge of people that we're
there's in. The bridge. There's the teachers. There's like our core academy kids. And then there's the war kids. And they kind of bounce around in a way where we dig into a character and then we kind of come out, and that's that storytelling. That is the writers and the producers and the director knowing that the audience is younger and we need to have a variety of different things going on. Mm-hmm. And they're really just ticking a lot of boxes and not sitting in their moments a lot. So we do get to see a variety of approaches to what Starfleet is through different lenses.
Right.
And that's what I'm liking. And I'm really curious if they're going to keep doing what I like or if this is just going to turn into a nice big old dumpster fire.
what gives me some hope, we have mentioned how across the internet there has been some dubious reviewing happening, is what I'm going to say. Some unfair reviewing. However, in spite of that, episode 6 has got a 7.3 on IMDb, which is
I'm probably going to hate it.
Right? It's way ahead of any other episode so far.
Do we need Giamatti back on screen? Is that what's going to happen?
Maybe there's a turning point somewhere, but it's just, I don't know, maybe. I love that they've got a season 2 as well. I just think this is a show that's going to age extremely well and I'm really enjoying it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Just so many thoughts about where they could go and what they could do. But I just keep coming back to this idea that there's this an idea that came to me earlier today. I think when you were talking about your number one point is with Captain Kitty and the leadership question, or then if you think with Jaden and what is a warrior and where is the battlefield? And in Islam, there is a concept of the jihad, and the lesser jihad is the external conflict of physically fighting with other people. But the inner conflict is the greater jihad. It's the space. It's the real battle of mastering yourself and learning who you are in relationship to yourself. And if they keep playing with that stuff, where these characters are confronting themselves, then I think, you know, they can throw Paul Giamatti on screen in a raging space battle, you know, and do all that
he
kind of stuff.
He won't be doing self-exploration. Yeah. He will be doing scene exploration.
Yes, exactly.
But
that's fine. We can have a couple of those episodes and it's not going to crash the show for me. It's not going to crash the series for me. It's going, as long as there is this new nutritional density in some of these other episodes, then I can continue to watch and be a fan of the show.
It seems like it's there every episode so far, and you could kind of like pin it as the show pivoting into like what a mentor could look like. Mm-hmm. The personal work to become a mentor, whether they're already a teacher and a mentor or Captain Kitty and they become a mentor. Just the idea that like people are watching you and they're going to learn from you and they're going to join you. And you get to decide what parts of yourself to show and to bring to light in a group setting or in a learning setting. Like you're the only one in control of yourself. So if the show really is trying to kind of show what mentoring the future looks like, mm-hmm. either the kids figuring it out for themselves, I say kids loosely, they're young adults, but whether they are trying to like figure out what kind of person they're going to be, what kind of mentor they could be, not just in like the literal sense, but in like the Star Trek sense, like mentoring and ushering in the next generation of Star Trek content or the literal interpretations that we see in those roles. I see that in every episode. So I would be surprised if they didn't continue to like lean on that as part of what the DNA of this particular show is.
Yeah, it would be weird because then you're like, well, what are you? What are you as a show if you suddenly stop doing that?
And like right. I was saying at the very beginning, and maybe this will kind of like wrap it up for me individually, is each style of show that I've watched so far in doing Captain's Pod, there seems to be like a little bit of a DNA, a fingerprint that they kind of go on. Mm-hmm. So Lower Decks comedy is part of what's going to be there every single episode. The callbacks, the leaning into the fun tropes of doing a sci-fi show in a way where it's like, this is actually in the world. It's just an animated version. So we get to do things you would never see before, like having someone be completely sucked on by an alien. We couldn't see that before and now we can. And it was fun. And it's actually content. It's actually canon content for Star Trek. Super fun. But like this one's DNA is just hitting on a teacher level, on a mentor level, on right, a building the future right. level. And there's like a, you know, the optimistic hope.
Hippie.
Definitely sounds Klingon.
Hippie Hopunk. That I think people are going to begrudgingly enjoy. I do. I think they're not, I mean, they don't want to have a good time at it. I think it's fun to hate on stuff, but
which, and what please, I'm enjoying,
don't get me wrong. I would hate on it if I didn't like it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I really would.
Yeah. And that's what I thought episode one was. It was going to be, okay, here's this alpha, cute, hot boy who gets taken from his mama. And Paul Giamatti is this screaming, over-the-top bad guy.
Yeah.
And this is what this is going to be. And I was like, oh, I was so glad that I saw two first, because then I was like, but this is weird. This is incongruous to that. And then three was like, wait a minute, where are we going? So yeah. I think you're right. I think that imprint of what they're trying to grapple with, any given episode can be any different thing.
Yeah.
But at its core, at what it's holding on to, as long as that continues to persist.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I said I was done and I'm not, but don't get me wrong. Would I like the show if we spent more time with the sassy sort of like burned out, I don't want your crap adults? Yes. I would love to watch this and like right. just sit in a class for a little longer.
Tig Notaro with a flamethrower.
Yes.
Tig.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or like the really aggressive half Klingon warden lady.
Laura Thok.
Like, yes.
Would I be even more pumped? Yeah, because I don't relate to the Academy kids as much as I would have. But guess what? This one's not aimed at me. This Star Trek is not aimed at me.
Right.
In fully. It's 40% for me. And I'm really appreciating learning from it and seeing what modern storytelling can look like in the Star Trek world. So anyway, I think I really am done now.
Zip. Just not.
Sorry.
You're fine.
Zip.
It's on brand for our community to have more to say. There's always another thing to say. Well, so if folks wanted to tune in, they would just search their podcast player for Captain's Pod.
Yeah, search Captain's Pod. Pretty much you'll grab us just about anywhere if you plug it into that Google thing.
And I think we'll put some links in the show notes for your Discord and your Patreon. For that, if folks want to find you, do you have anything else going on that we should be aware of, or are you just in coverage of this for the time being?
Yeah, we are knee deep in coverage of obviously Starfleet Academy, and we're posting a couple of extra things on Patreon when it makes sense. We don't have a set release schedule for extra content on there. Okay. It's just usually when a Klingon moment takes Danae, she's like, I need to know more about this immediately.
I like it. A little lore dives.
Yeah.
Talk about Mugatos or what are the black, half black, white people? I forget what they're called.
Yeah.
I forgot what they're called as well. But there's one of them in this show. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you call that segment?
Oh, it was Captain's Pod Supplemental.
There you go.
I was rather proud of that one. Yeah, that's the podcast feed is the main thing. And get in touch with us, ianandDanae@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, I think we'll probably try to, maybe we should touch base at the end of the season and do
it. Yeah, that'll be really interesting. Recap. Yeah. See how much it continued to deliver for us.
We're doing 10 on this.
10 episodes. Yeah.
And we're halfway, obviously mid-season. And these things air on Thursdays, I think. And you guys usually have your pods out midweek.
Yeah. So we watch the episode and then immediately record. We don't do any research. Nice. We don't do anything deeper. We just dive straight into raw feelings. And then that episode comes out Tuesday for patrons and then Wednesday. So it's just in time to get a little recap before going into the next episode.
Thursday. Perfect. Okay. Well, as always, it's a pleasure to see and talk with you guys. And
always. Thank you for having us, David.
Thank you.
Talk again soon. Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.